Welcome to the Government Contracts Legal Roundup, a podcast focusing on important developments facing government contractors and grant recipients. This podcast is put on by the Jenner & Block Government Contracts Practice Group. I'm David Robbins, the co-chair of the group, and it's my pleasure to host this podcast. We've got a bunch of bid protests to start, so let's start with systems dynamics, international versus United States. Here, a Court of Federal Claims judge, Judge Davis, issued a reminder to offerors about the importance of proposing and clearly mapping to key personnel who meet the solicitation's minimum requirements. Here, SDI protested that the agency mis-evaluated awardee Strata G. That's Strata hyphen capital G, clever name. Strata G's proposal by assigning it a significant weakness as opposed to a disqualifying deficiency, where it mapped 22 labor categories to key personnel with clearly deficient or at least insufficiently ambiguous educational backgrounds. For example, Strategy's proposal had several employees with bachelor's degrees instead of bachelor's of science degrees, and additionally proposed individuals with associate's degrees instead of bachelor's degrees. In response, the agency and Strategy contended that Strategy's proposal was appropriately assigned a significant weakness but not disqualified because it proposed several key personnel who exceeded the solicitation's requirements, and to the extent Strategy failed to sufficiently address certain minimum educational requirements, it was within the agency's discretion to assign it a significant weakness as opposed to a deficiency. Judge Davis rejected the agency and Strategy's arguments, finding the company's proposal in 22 out of 28 labor categories did not comply with the solicitation's requirements, a fact recognized by the agency's evaluators, who concluded that Strategy's labor mapping spreadsheet did not fully meet the solicitation's requirements. Applying the solicitation's definition of a deficiency, consistent with FAR 15.001, Judge Davis found Strategy's labor mapping constituted, quote, a material failure of a proposal to meet a government requirement or a combination of significant weaknesses in a proposal that increases the risk of unsuccessful contract performance to an unacceptable level. Accordingly, the court granted SDI's request for a permanent injunction, setting aside the award to Strategy and ordering the agency to conduct a proper evaluation. Now look, generally, agencies have discretion to assess the adequacy of an offeror's proposal with respect to a solicitation's requirements. However, an agency cannot permit offerors to disregard minimum requirements set forth in the solicitation. System Dynamics International provides an important reminder to contractors to carefully map proposed key personnel and not to play fast and loose with minimum education and expertise requirements. Moving on, Insight Technology Solutions LLC, this one was GAO. GAO sustained a protest where the evaluation record contained a factual error overstating the relevancy of one of the awardee's corporate experience references, an inaccurate finding that carried through to the selection decision. GAO also agreed that the agency disparately evaluated corporate experience references by finding that the awardee's proposed subcontractors demonstrated certain relevant experience, but not also reaching the same finding for protesters' proposed subcontractors. In finding prejudice, GAO found that it was unclear, but for those errors, whether the selection authority would have reached the same conclusion. This protest illustrates some of the most common procurement errors that lead GAO to sustain a protest. Although GAO will not reevaluate proposals, it will examine the record to determine whether the evaluation and source selection decision were reasonable, consistent with the solicitation, and not contrary to law. Here, the agency admitted that the evaluation record contained a misstatement and further demonstrated disparate treatment. And then moving on to Guidehouse, another GAO protest. There, GAO sustained a protest challenging DOD's award of a contract to Deloitte for audit remediation and sustainment services, where the agency failed to adequately consider a potential conflict of interest. Specifically, and this one's interesting, the chair of the agency's technical evaluation board was a senior consultant at Deloitte through May of 2020, and she was aware that Deloitte might submit a quotation under the solicitation. The agency therefore initiated, in its own words, a limited investigation of the matter, which GAO described as confined to whether she had a disqualifying financial interest in Deloitte. Based on DOD ethics attorney's conclusion that her financial holdings did not create a conflict, she was permitted to lead the technical evaluation board. GAO took issue with this assessment. Primarily, GAO criticized the agency for declining to provide any of the underlying contemporaneous documentation related to its limited investigation. As GAO explained, and in GAO's words, The problem with the lack of any underlying record is particularly acute where there is no evidence of any independent investigation of any conflict or the appearance of a potential conflict by either of the involved contracting officers. GAO sustained the protest because due to the sparse record produced, it was unable to determine whether, in fact, the chair had a financial interest in Deloitte or whether any such interest would affect her ability to serve as chair of the Technical Evaluation Board. On the contrary, the limited record contained potentially contradictory evidence on the question of the chair's financial interest in Deloitte. The FAR emphasizes that, quote, government business shall be conducted in a manner above reproach and except as authorized by statute or regulation with complete impartiality and with preferential treatment for none. That's FAR 3.101-1. Consistent with this warning, GAO has found the existence of an actual or apparent conflict of interest is sufficient to taint the procurement, particularly where, as was the case here, an agency fails to adequately investigate and resolve a question concerning whether an agency employee who actively and extensively engaged in procurement-related activities should have been recused from those activities. Moreover, whenever a particular agency action is under protest, GAO needs a sufficient record to assess the reasonableness of the action. An agency's effort to limit document production can frustrate GAO's mandate to fairly resolve bid protests and could preclude the GAO's ability to determine that an agency's actions were, in fact, reasonable. And that was the case here. We also have one more protest from GAO, Zolon, not Zohan, that old movie, but Zolon, Z-O-L-O-N, PCS2.LLC. GAO denied a protest alleging that the awardee's technical proposal was non-compliant with the solicitation. The two awardees were credited with strengths for their approach to retention because they offered premium pay to employees holding security clearances, including by specifying within the technical proposal volume the percentage of premium pay offered to cleared employees. The protester contended that this ran afoul of the solicitation's prohibition on including special labor rates or other pricing information within the technical proposal volume. GAO disagreed, finding that the terms of the solicitation did not prohibit offerors from including in their technical proposals information on a specified percentage of premium pay to be added to the labor rate where the technical proposal did not preclude the actual labor rate. In other words, the percentage of premium pay was not pricing information, but rather an element of the recruiting and retention approach. GAO likewise rejected the notion that the solicitation was latently ambiguous, reasoning that nothing in the plain language of the solicitation barred offerors from including information in their technical proposals about percentages for clearance premium pay. While it may be generally true that solicitations restrict offerors from including pricing information in non-price proposal volumes, GAO will look to the terms of the solicitation itself in determining what information may be included in the technical volume. Two non-protest updates for you. First, on uniform grant guidance. And for those of you who are grant recipients, you'll be interested to know that OMB has issued a proposed rewrite of the uniform guidance for federal grants. It's about a decade after it last came out. Among the many proposed updates is more closely aligning the federal contracting and federal assistance processes for disclosing potential violations. Stated differently, the uniform guidance will, if the proposed rules remain in place, have its own mandatory disclosure rule after a fashion, rather than an informal practice of disclosing among recipients. The proposed rule also issued guidance about how to implement Section 889's prohibitions on covered telecommunications programs and products, for grant recipients. Spoiler alert, the requirements are less restrictive than in the contracting context and more akin to a prohibition on purchasing with government funds. There are also a number of anti-discrimination and social policy proposals in the uniform guidance, and an increase in certain monetary thresholds and reduction in certain administrative burdens, particularly associated with some pre-approvals from the government before grant recipients can take action. This is worth a read for any interested in who actually do receive federal funds on the grant side. And let's just do a very quick suspension debarment update before we wrap up. As many of you know, I was a former acting Air Force suspending debarring official. This is one of the very few roles in the government, and I am one of the very few in private practice, who have the decision-making or had the decision-making authority to exclude companies and individuals from government contracting. Not just work up packages, not just make recommendations, but make those decisions. And every year I publish within about a month of the close of the government fiscal year an update on the numbers of actions for the prior fiscal year. I completed the analysis this week, and I'm writing the article now, but here's a quick preview. Looks like the numbers are down, and not by a little, with details to come in the article in usual detailed fashion. And this happens at a time when there are threats to the suspension debarment system overall. The most recent is an interim rule from the FAR Council that require contractors to check the system for award management to locate and comply with Federal Acquisition Security Council removal orders. You'll recall we've had separate orders for Chinese telecommunications equipment, Russian cybersecurity equipment, etc. This routinizes that process and will affect all contractors and their compliance duties going forward. Its impact on the suspension debarment system remains to be seen, but I'll cover it in more depth in my forthcoming annual article. And with that, we'll close this podcast edition. Thank you for joining us for the Government Contracts Legal Roundup. If you have any questions or need more information about anything here, I can be reached at 202-639-6040 or drobbins@jenner.com.